I was flipping through the channels the other day, but there was nothing good on. I had nothing to play. So I went to my computer and realized that there was so much content before my eyes. But there's nothing but Netflix in my heart and on my screen. There's always something good that I still haven't seen. But maybe one day we can try to watch the rest.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Will from America. It's nothing but Netflix. And today we wrap up on August today as we watch an episode of Untold, The Girlfriend Who Didn't Exist. And we're talking about the saga of Manti Te'o, which, believe it or not, happened 10 years ago. And here with me, a man who sometimes I wonder, is he too good to be true? Is this maybe made up? Could this be real? It's Chappelle. Chappelle, how are you? You're real, right?
I'm real, Rob. I was born in Texas and I grew up there, and I was in middle school. I got a pet turtle named De Serrano, and then I graduated.
De Serrano. I thought it was Lil Bow Wow.
I never told you that. What are you talking about?
Hmm.
Yeah, but everything I tell you is true. It's real.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Now I'm having some questions. All right, Chappelle. Manti Te'o.
Yes, Manti Te'o. Rob, I remember, man, it's crazy because I kind of remember where I was when all of this stuff popped off. You know, when the news broke about the, I don't remember so much the lead into Manti Te'o's, season that he ends up dedicating to his girlfriend and his grandma. But I definitely remember when the news broke that it could all be fake. It was wild. It was everywhere. And I had forgotten about it, honestly.
Yes.
It's been a long time. And then Netflix just drops this on my plate. And I'm like, what?
Okay.
Why is this here?
Well, we're going to unpack all that here today as we go through the two-part documentary of this is part of a series called Untold. I have not watched any of the other Untold episodes, but they do like mini documentaries every week. Have you watched any other Untold episodes?
Actually, I think I have. Do you have the running list of all of them? Because I really wish. I think I've seen at least one before. I know they have the one out that's out now. But I saw Malice at the Palace. That was the first one, I believe. You didn't watch it?
No, I do watch most things that Meta World Peace is involved with. But no, that is actually not one.
It is so good. It takes you through the story of that big fight between the Pacers and the Pistons in 2004. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like it was one of those things that in the moment it looked very different, you know, like through the lens of 2004, it looked very, very problematic in the eyes of from the fans to the basketball players. But looking back, oh, dear God, like the fans were horrible. The news was horrible. Society was horrible. And I think a lot of that is echoed here in the Manti Te'o story as well.
Yeah. You know, what I didn't realize is that Untold, it's sort of like Netflix's answer to like 30 for 30. But it's all like sports related things. So things that are sort of like at least in some way sort of like tied into the sports world. They have one about Caitlyn Jenner. You mentioned and one, Malice at the Palace. There's one about Roger Federer. So that they're all sort of like things from the sports world to go back and take a look at that.
Yeah, I think the 30 for 30 used to be on Netflix, and now I'm pretty sure ESPN Plus probably owns all of those back, you know. And so, was that Disney? I think because they took 30 for 30 off of Netflix for the most part, I think they had to replace it. And I honestly think the content is really good. Malice at the Palace was really good, but this was really good too, Rob.
Yeah, I thought this was very interesting. I didn't know that all of the parties involved were also going to be part of this. I thought it was sort of just like one of these things where they're just talking about, you know, the people that investigated a crime. I didn't know they had like everybody involved with this. So that was certainly a surprise to go back because I had not heard anything about Manti Te'o in several years since he went into the NFL. So we'll get into all that. I just want to also say last week, I thought we had a lot of fun covering Daybreak with the Queen of the Vampires, Mari Fourth.
Yeah, I told you she's good. Mari is like, I mean, because she is a vampire, she obviously knows all that there is to know. She's brushed up on her vampire history. But she really did, like, she was, you know, outshine us both on that podcast. I mean, wow. It's so crazy how much she knew. It was is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, to the surprise of nobody.
Yeah, I was like, it's Mari. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. Yeah. She gave me the worst introduction on Crime Scene, though. I mean, she said, like, the...
Worse than when you were on Renap for the first time?
Yeah, even worse than that. Like, Akiva just accused me, you know, he'd just be lying, but he accused me of never, like, listening to the podcast, potentially. But Mari called me, I think, the irresponsible and something else, Chappelle? Like, irresponsible, irredeemable?
Irredeemable?
Yeah. She dragged me to hell, but I was so happy. As a vampire, I'm sure she has that ability to drag me to hell. But I was so happy that she came on. It was a good time.
Yeah. Okay, so check that one out if you have missed it over on last week's Nothing But Netflix. Right. So I guess where do you want to start talking about Untold?
Well, Rob, I really think that, you know, there's a lot of listeners who just listen to us banter. They actually don't watch the property. So I need to give them
Manti Te'o story.
Right. And even if you did know it, you don't know it like they tell it in this story. Mm-hmm. So maybe we need to give them the rundown of just exactly what happened. Okay. Yes. You know, yeah. So, Rob, you were probably a little bit more tapped into everything around that time than I was. Do you have a vivid memory of this time?
So I remember the scandal. I'm interested to know why do you feel like I was more tapped in?
You're a pinch older than me. So news coverage would have. Like for me and Manti Te'o are a couple years apart. So it's kind of like, was I watching the news? Maybe not, you know. Mm-hmm.
So I was, it was 2012, like early 2013 when this stuff started to break. And so I was very much like tapped into, you know, what was happening in the news. I'm not a college football person. And so I probably had like no involvement in like Manti Te'o in terms of like his college football playing career until the scandal broke. And then I remember, you know, I was like, I don't know if I was like a regular like Deadspin reader. Like I'm sure I had checked out the site from time to time. I mean, this was kind of before most news was on like social media. Like, I just feel like everything is just on Twitter and whatever. But I feel like you wanted to like, okay, let me like go and get like news. Like, okay, I go to this website and then I go to this website and then I go to this website. And that's like, you know, how I get all of the different news that's happening. And then this story had really broken in a huge way where it was like entertainment news. And this was sort of like around the same time as like kind of like around the era of like Charlie Sheen, like having his big like media attention thing. It was just like sometimes there would be like a scandal that was like, ooh, like this is fun to talk about. Like, and everybody has an opinion. Every single news show like talks about this. And, you know, that's kind of like what this turned into. And I remember thinking at the time, not like being super, on top of those, all of the particulars. I'm like, how was he not in on it? He obviously, like, he knew what was going on. Manti Te'o had to have known it. Who could have? How could this? How could you have a girlfriend and you don't even you've never like done any sort of like, this is my girlfriend, let me see you on like webcam, whatever, you know, whatever with I guess Skype.
Yeah, what do people have in 09?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly, you know, the time and the place. But I remember just feeling like, how is this possible? Like, he had to have been in on it. And that was my feeling on like, I was felt very much like Manti Te'o is part of this hoax, which this film really goes, you know, to great lengths to say Manti Te'o is like a saint on this earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the toughest part about watching this, honestly, is just knowing that in any 2009, 2010, 2011 lens, probably up until recent years, you couldn't believe something like this. So it's like the media was not kind to Manti Te'o at all. But I mean, how could they be at that time? You know, it wasn't how the world was looked at. And not to say that they were right in any way, because I'm about to drag them to hell too. But, you know, it's just like, wow, this man really like bared his soul to this person. He cared for them deeply. He had never met them, but I mean, people have long distance relationships and friendships with people online all the time now in 2022 that they've never met. And you check on these people and you talk to these people and all this other stuff. But in 2009, it was just unheard of for you to talk to somebody that much and to call them your girlfriend, and you've never actually physically seen them, you know, or been in the same room as them, which I think it's still kind of odd to call somebody your girlfriend if you've never been in the room with them. But it was just back then, it was so absurd and it was so unheard of. And it was like one of the first time we'd ever heard of somebody like on a large scale being catfished or, you know, of anything like this happening. And it was so unbelievable that people just couldn't, and you know, and so it was easier to believe that there was some foul play involved. And Manti Te'o was the victim of a lot of that, you know. I think had I been podcasting back then, I'd have been very mean to Manti Te'o. And I'm not to say that I would have been okay with, you know, looking back, I've probably been very embarrassed about the things that I said about him. I think because I was much like younger than I am now, I don't think I had a strong opinion about it. I was kind of like, oh man, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, at this current age, back then I would have lit him up. And so yeah, it made me really take a deep look at myself and some of the things that I mean, say about people.
It's hard because, you know, we are only like, as like consumers of the media, like we only mm-hmm. can process the information that is being given to us and reacting to that. Like, are you supposed to, like, before you form an opinion on things, like go out and, you know, before you tweet, are you supposed to do like due diligence and like research the facts of the case? I guess a lot of people say, yeah, you are supposed to.
Yeah.
But like, exactly. Can I just have opinions on things? Like, can I just be a human being for 1 second?
Yeah, but it's kind of like, be a human being, but not at the expense of somebody else. Or also, have an opinion, but keep it to yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think all those things are options. And it's just that we just didn't know about that. A lot of times it's easy to forget that, too, because we think we have right. freedom of speech. Why can't we just say yeah. what's on our mind? But you like, nobody could have foresaw how much like he was going through. I think if you assume that he is guilty, then it makes it a lot easier to punch at him, you know, to say, oh, okay, well, we're making fun of him because he's complicit mm-hmm. in this, you know, so he deserves to get dragged. But then when you find out later on, oh my God, he didn't have anything to do with this, you're like, oh yeah, I'm sorry, I wish I could take that back. Mm-hmm. So it's a like a thin yeah. line to kind of, you know, trapeze at sometimes, yeah. you know, when you have these very public opinions.
My opinion on it, I think at the time was that, you know, like he sort of like, oh, this was good, like PR to like tell this story. And he did it like in one interview and it sort of like caught on like wildfire of, oh yeah, I have a girlfriend and she died. And I did not know the extent of everything else that's going on that the documentary explores. But I think that was my thinking about it at the time. And then I really did not think about it much past, like it was sort of like everybody was talking about this for, you know, a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Manti Te'o was kind of like a byproduct or like I guess a victim to a different war, right? This was really Deadspin versus the media. Mm-hmm. It was Deadspin's attempt to make all these people who have been fawning over Manti Te'o look stupid. They're yes. like, oh, you've been making such a big deal about this thing and now you're wrong. And look at us making you look like a bad journalist. And Manti Te'o just happened to be caught in the crossfire of that
yeah.
because he had nothing to do with the hoax. And then also, he's not the one who made it a big story, you know, but he is the one who took the most damage. I really say that. And so this documentary does a really good job of kind of just like showing you where he was when in his thought process, what he was like, what type of person he is. And then to show the effect this had on him. Back then, like now you go viral on social media when something stupid happens to you, you like will trend for a day or two and then it'll go away because there'll be something else that's stupid or viral comes out. But back then it was like, was the news just that slow? I mean, you got Diane Sawyer, you know, commenting on Manti Te'o's fake girlfriend. It's mm-hmm. just like, man, it's like this guy didn't need that. Well, yeah. Like I said, different time.
It was a different time. The world political scene was not as
popping.
Exciting, yeah, as it would go on to be. So I think that there was a lot of like there was a lot more like people like around to like pick up and run with the story. And also, like, I do think that also, like, the news cycle didn't even move as fast then as, like, you know, something would be a big story and, like, would stay a big story, I think, for a little bit longer. But I do think that one of the criticisms of the Untold documentary is Deadspin's role in all of this. And I do not believe, unless I missed it, it was really covered in the documentary. They had the people that worked at Deadspin. But a big part of this story was that Deadspin, in its reportings, and of course, they tell you about all of, like, the great journalistic work that they did to break the Manti Te'o story, that then did an interview with one person who claimed that they found a person who was, like, close to the situation, who said they felt like it was 80% that Manti Te'o had to have been in on it. And they ran with that. Whereas, like, everything else was like, okay, we're journalists. We did blah, 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 blah. But then also it's like, somebody's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, some person just said without evidence, pretty sure Manti Te'o was involved with that. They printed that. And also that started to get then reported, like, fact to people that Manti Te'o was in on it, when there was no evidence to support that Manti Te'o was in on it. But in sort of, like, the whole firestorm and controversy, that part got left out of the documentary and was a big part of why people were so upset with Manti Te'o.
Yeah, and Deadspin even tells us that they got an anonymous email. You know, they say, oh, I checked my email inbox and there was an email from, it just said from, like, me or from Chris or something like that. And it said, oh, well, have you looked into this Manti Te'o thing? He's not exactly who he says he is. And, like, this girlfriend thing is made up. But that was it. Like, they never said who they got the email from. You know, they never said who was the person who kind of, like, made them look further into this. And so it does feel like maybe they made it up, you know, like, possibly they thought, like, this could be fake and just kind of ran with it. I mean, a couple Google searches at that time would have shown you that there was something amiss. But, you know, to make it sound like there was, like, an anonymous tip and that all this stuff just happened in front of them and they were just trying to go up to the media, when in reality they had said some pretty damning things as well. There were some accusations made that they just didn't cover. I feel like it's a little disingenuous, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't like that part. So I had serious issues with parts of this documentary, but I think it was really well done. I mean, I was like, this was entertainment. You know, I was on the edge of my seat for a lot of it, even though I knew the outcome. But it's a lot, Rob. I'm not gonna lie to you. I was watching this. It was kind of a tough watch.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's, I guess, talk it through, because we sort of get introduced to Manti Te'o, who that, you know, was, like, a big time college football prospect. Manti Te'o loved football. He really wanted to go into college football with the hopes of eventually going into the NFL. And then ultimately, he's all set to go to USC. And I thought that this was really, he has, like, one conversation with, like, a priest that's like, hey, you could just go be the next, like, you know, Samoan star at USC, or you could go to Notre. Was this guy a Notre Dame recruiter that was catfishing?
I mean, well, see, that's the thing too. Like, Manti Te'o, they do a good job in the first episode of outlining that Manti Te'o was such a principled person, right? Like, he believed in family and God and football. You know, those were, like, his big three. So he was very disciplined and he prayed about everything. And he had prayed to you know, going to college is a big deal. And so he had prayed on, you know, his decision to go to USC. And then the next day, I think he talked to his athletic director or something and was just like, you know, I'm probably going to go to USC. And the guy was like, or hear me out. What if you went to Notre Dame? And Manti Te'o was like, is this God speaking to me? Like, I just prayed on this yesterday. I was looking for a sign. This feels like a sign. Maybe I shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. The crazy thing is, as somebody who's worked in, like, college recruiting and stuff like that, I would never suggest a kid like Manti Te'o to go to Notre Dame. He's coming from a different religious background. He's also from Hawaii. Like, I would be saying exactly what everybody else was saying. Like, why don't you go to California? But I think so many people from Polynesian backgrounds end up in California that it felt like No. This is your chance to go be your own person, you know, to go be you in a different spot rather than being one of a list of notable Polynesian, college football players. That decision right there is really what gets the ball rolling on a lot of things, because from there he ends up at a school he doesn't even want to go to, really. Mm-hmm. He's trying to get acclimated. But the craziest thing about it is that Manti Te'o's personality was so fit for that school because he was so disciplined and, engrossed in his faith. And he was such a good person that, you know, they just latched on to him as almost like a pillar of what the school and the college football team should look like. He was a beast on the field, mm-hmm. but then like almost like a teddy bear off the field. And that's exactly what they wanted.
Yeah. And for like the school of Notre Dame, like the fact that because of this is where he was, like if Manti Te'o was playing like at like Michigan or something like that and had this same story, like I don't think that the media would have ran with it. But because it's sort of like this storied university and this storied college football program that was enjoying a renaissance, the media loves Notre Dame. And they talked about how like, okay, oh, the saga of Manti Te'o was playing for his dead girlfriend and grandmother. It fits in with sort of like, you know, win one for the Gipper and Rudy and sort of like these like stories that get told around Notre Dame football. Like if he was playing like in Miami, would the media have cared at all about Manti Te'o was playing for his, you know, a girlfriend who passed away?
Right. Absolutely not. And they do talk about that a little bit. Notre Dame is a football school, but it's known for its stories. Like you said, the Gipper, the Green Jersey game, things of that nature. So this was just like another story that they could add to the list of, oh, you know, Notre Dame is almost like ordained to have these moments because it's such a religious school. Mm-hmm. And they love that kind of stuff. I used to work at a religious school. Trust me on this one. They will just be like, God said so. This was one of those moments. So you had a kid who grew up in Hawaii, which is very much away from a lot of, you know, the United States proper, you know, like the continental United States, I guess I should say. Being separated from a lot of people and he's from a small town in Hawaii. So being separated from a lot of people and stuff like that, it wasn't unheard of for him to be having a long distance relationship. But at some point, before he even graduates, he gets a friend request from a person who was calling themselves Lene. And Lene had already befriended a bunch of, like, I guess he had some mutuals with Lene and like relatives and stuff. So they had already had a friendship. But we find out in this documentary that Lene was a person named Renaya, who is a trans woman now, at the time was living as Renaya, I guess, but wanted to experience what it would be like to have a social media presence that was a woman. And so they created the Lene account and started to befriend people and talk to them, but they're kind of like living their truth, but in a social media bubble. And in that way, they came in contact with Manti Te'o. So it sounds like initially it started off pretty innocent. But as the years go by, as Manti gets drafted into college and goes to play for Notre Dame, they kind of, establish like a text relationship, mm-hmm. and then it gets deeper than text and they have phone conversations. And so they bond a lot, you know, just over the fact that they were both Polynesian and both maybe they have similar backgrounds, but ultimately it was just that they were cool. You know, they had always had this rapport. And so it just got closer and closer and closer until we ultimately end up at this big reveal that this person was not who they were saying that they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is really interesting the way that this story was covered, because we sort of like get the perspective of what Manti Te'o was experiencing. And then also we hear the story of Naya, who she tells the story from her perspective, how she basically like started this off as fun and then kind of got in too deep, had to get out. And we sort of get her perspective on the whole thing. And I have to say, I think she comes across and gets a very positive edit in this. Like, it's almost like I feel like that this is they do, like, I think a good job in sort of like they tell you the story that there really is like no villain in this story. I guess ultimately, like the probably the biggest villain as I perceived it in this ends up being the media.
Yeah. The media
took this and ran with it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, casual homophobia does like hop in at the end of this as well.
Surprise. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just one of like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, from the outside looking in, you could be like, this person took advantage of Manti Te'o. And then when you watch this, you're like, well, this person was doing a thing and probably didn't realize Manti Te'o was going to be so affected. Manti Te'o was doing a thing, mm-hmm. didn't realize that they were being so affected. And now those two things have collided. And, you know, Manti Te'o is really, like I said, he's taking the brunt of this. But Naya was not without, you know, blowback as well. They got a lot of the feedback. When we don't really about much of that, they talk more about Manti Te'o, and obviously, you know, because he's the victim of a lot of this. But they don't go into as much as what Naya went through after this was all revealed. They talk about it kind of a little bit, but it's really the Manti Te'o story. But yeah, these two people just happened to be doing two things that were running parallel, and then at some point they collided and they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that? Should Naya have not gotten as positive of an edit here? But did Naya in some way, did Naya ruin Manti Te'o's life? Or did Manti Te'o, as was talked about in the documentary, Manti Te'o was good, but did sort of like the whole saga around this story that he had built, did that sort of elevate him as a prospect? I mean, there's one point where they talk about like a really Manti Te'o kind of had no business being in the conversation for the Heisman. It's sports writers, and really that this sort of like put Manti Te'o like on the national scene in a way that he probably wouldn't have if he didn't have these circumstances around him.
Yeah, what if both these people were hooked up to a polygraph and everything that they said in the documentary was true, then I think that the edit was fine. I think if everybody was saying exactly how it happened and it's 100% true, then yes. As we know, that's probably like some gray area. Both parties involved are probably lying mm-hmm. a little bit. Because you just can't assume everybody's telling the truth all the time. But I do think you could look at this through another lens and really paint Naya as a villain, because a lot of this, I mean, this does not happen if Naya doesn't go and create that Linnea account. But at the same time, it's like to say that they ruined their life. I don't think so, because like you said, Manti Te'o is bolstered by this story. You know, he becomes a part of the conversation because of this story. Manti Te'o was a good linebacker, but it was not the best linebacker in the entire, you know, history of football. Mm-hmm. I think even when he was coming out of high school, he was like number two or something like that, linebacker or inside linebacker, I think, at the time. So it's kind of like, it's not like this is, for lack of a better term, God's gift to football. But at the same time, I think there are things that you could definitely let's lay at the feet of Lene and say that, yeah, this is your fault. And his life would be different, Manti's. But better is the question. I think Manti Te'o probably does not, you know, I wouldn't wish what he went through on anybody, you know, that the years of slander and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's like, would Manti Te'o have like gone on to be a legendary football player? Who knows? I don't know what Manti Te'o is doing today. But, you know, I think Manti Te'o would probably say that it happened because it was supposed to. I think that's how Manti Te'o, and he's forgiven Lene at this point. Mm-hmm. So ruin their life, I probably wouldn't go with, but ruin their football career, maybe.
Well, because that Manti Te'o, that we get to the NFL draft, and I think a lot of people are sort of like looking at Manti Te'o as like a first round NFL draft prospect, as like he's going through like being in consideration for the Heisman Trophy. And then this whole scandal ends up dropping and people are questioning his character. Manti Te'o is like having to answer like ridiculous questions like in the media, like being asked on the Today Show, but are you gay? And this is like something that's like really a character question mark here in, you know, 2013. In the lead up to the NFL draft. And there's a lot of gay panic around Manti Te'o and like having him in the locker rooms. And then he ultimately gets drafted in by the Chargers in the third round. So his draft stock really ends up slipping, but then he kind of gets to the NFL and he can't play. he talks about in the documentary about how I like, and this like really was just like some sort of like psychosomatic thing that happened to him. But he sort of says like that his legs don't work when he gets on the football field anymore once he reaches the NFL.
Yeah, he started having anxiety about it. So Manti Te'o, a lot of the things that he did, he was so, like I said, so principled, so disciplined, and he would pray on things and he would go with whatever he came up with, including, you know, his big lead to go to Notre Dame in the first place. And so all that being said, he was so used to just going with his instinct or what he prayed about and what he felt strongly about. And so football was like that. You know, he would get out on the football field at Notre Dame and he would just transform to this like football machine. But then when he got to the NFL, after all of this, he was shook. He didn't know if he could trust himself because he started to question his own sanity. I mean, there are points throughout this, Rob, where I'm like, I mean, if I'm presented with the same evidence Manti Te'o's presented with, I don't think it's out of like the realm of possibility that I would fall for something like this as well. Just because there were so many things that he believed to be true for so long that when you find out that they're all lies, you're just like, I don't know which way is up anymore. And so he would get on the football field and he just didn't have enough confidence in his own abilities anymore. He just started to question his own thought process. And so his anxiety started to kick in. He ended up going to therapy about it. I really wish the documentary gave us more background on what and how Manti Te'o is affected by that today. Because I don't think we get any of that, honestly. It kind of ends with, you know, and the rest is history. It's like, but no, the rest is the last 10 years. I would like to hear about them. So I don't know. It's so funny that, you know, his, like I said, football was very much affected by this whole situation. I think if anything, that's what took the biggest hit for Manti Te'o. But I mean, he's bigger than just football, than being a football player. I wonder, you know, if he looks at this whole situation, like, you know, had it been different, you know, would he have changed it to where he would be currently in the football league? Is he happy with what he's doing now? I really wish they had gotten into that more.
There were a lot of things that came to light in the documentary that sort of like helped like kind of explain how this all happened. I do want to say that Naya, she had quite the operation going on here in terms of like the lengths that she went to. Like, I think that I felt like at the time, how could this happen? They really explained, you know, Naya had a lot of levels of things that she was working on to like keep Manti Te'o like believing that this was going on, including like a whole cast of characters.
This was some professional shit, Rob. I'm not gonna lie to you. She had a whole system. So the one thing that was going for her the most is that she had established this persona. This was not a targeted attempt at Manti Te'o from jump, right? It might have been, but they didn't talk about it like that. But before she even came in contact with Manti Te'o online, she had already been having conversation with other people, had like similar kind of like a chatty, texty kind of relationships with people, but she kept having to break them off every time anybody wanted to meet, which makes sense because obviously she was not portraying herself as herself at the time. By the time she came across Manti, he was able to cross-reference these other people and say, do you know this woman? Have you seen her? Have you met her or whatever? And she had already laid the groundwork that, like, his cousin was like, yeah, I, you know, we're Facebook friends or whatever. She's cool, you know, or I talked to her a few times. I've talked to her on the phone, which they were. And so by the time Manti is in it, he's having conversations with her. He's having conversations with her cousin, who might have just been her, you know, disguising their voice. She's having conversations with the niece, who was actually the niece, you know, like it was there, or her little sister, I think. And so Manti Te'o, there was not anybody to fact check him at that point. Nobody was ever able to step in and say, this is not what it seems, because they were all complicit as well, just because she had like roped them in, you know, like these fake people, even the real people that were involved. They were like, yeah, I talked to her, you know? So, Manti Te'o was like, he was the person working off the least amount of information, I would say. Whereas these other people, they didn't have anybody to cross-reference with, you know, like you just randomly became friends with somebody you had no mutuals with. Manti was like, she knew my cousin, you know, and she knew a couple other people. Why wouldn't I, you know, assume this was a real person? So, yeah, the cast of characters is really what threw him in a blender, because it was like he was in his own little universe that she had created
Yeah. And for Manti Te'o, like this kind of was like a perfect relationship set up for him, because like basically like his life seemingly was football. And so like he was somebody that didn't really have time for, like, you know, if you have like a real relationship, like that other person that you were in the relationship with is going to have like a lot of things going on in their lives. And then you're like going to have to like spend time like hearing about like everything that they are going through in their world. Whereas like the way that Lanai ended up being just a part of like I was just there to hear about Manti Te'o's day, and then I'll let you get back to everything that you have going on. That this like worked out well for Manti Te'o, because it was just like somebody who completely understood that it was really going to have to be all about him and his football career.
Mm-hmm. And this person had a good knowledge of football. We know Lene before they transitioned was a football player as well, mm-hmm. come from a football family. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of their relatives have went to the NFL.
Yes.
And so they could really have these conversations with Manti, you know, on a level where they, you know, he didn't feel like he was just
a
speaking to the
football boys. Family that she is part of.
Hmm. Yeah. And so this was perfect. And then it was long distance. So it's kind of just like he just needed to check in. Also, like I said, he's a very religious guy. And so, you know, and I think he comes from the LDS community. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe physicality isn't something that he was looking for at the time,
right.
You know, pre-marriage or something like that. So it was kind of just like they were checking all the boxes. He just could just text in, check in, call, talk on the phone, you know, be a support system for Manti Te'o while he's living in like a snowy location. You know, he's a boy from Hawaii who's now moved across the country to go, you know, live in like the opposite of a tropical location. Mm-hmm. And so he's homesick. You know, this isn't a school that is in the same like religious background as him. He's away, he's away from his family. And so this kind of like a piece of home that he could always reach back to, even though she was from like California, it just felt like so familiar to him for a while. And then it just became more and more serious until it was out of control.
Okay. So we have this wild scene at the end of the documentary where I wasn't expecting Dr. Phil to be so involved. That was a little bit of a curveball.
Once Dr. Phil got up on the screen, I stood up and walked out of the room, and then mm-hmm. I had to come back. Cause I was just like, you know what? Anytime there's a story of like horrific incident that happened to anybody in the media, Dr. Phil is right there on the wrong side of history.
All right, hold on. Let me get involved with this here, Manti Te'o.
Oh God, he sucks so bad. Dr. Phil, if a relative of Dr. Phil's is listening to this, tell him he sucks so
Hold
bad.
Hold on, Chappelle.
Sucks.
What do you mean by that?
That guy sucks. By the time Dr. Phil got there, I was like, okay, we've gone off the rails, because like we don't really talk about a lot of the interviews that Lene does at the time in the moment where they're talking about their perspective. But dear God, Dr. Phil was like, nope, come on my show and I want to know everything. Like, you tell me everything. How did you make your voice different? I brought in the best experts in the FBI. I brought in the voice analyst, and they said that there is 99%.
It was 10 million to 1 that could be you on that tape.
Yeah. And Lene is like, hold my beer. You know, I definitely, this is me. And then Dr. Phil has them doing like voice recognition and stuff on the show. It's like, what the hell, Dr. Phil? He's the worst.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Was wild because we saw, you know, Naya was saying like, okay, well, I can't just do the voice.
Right.
And so she's like behind like a curtain. And then is able to then do the Lanai voice.
Yeah, which, you know, okay, like people can do voices. It's so funny too that in 2012, people are like, people can change their voice. What? Like, my boss and co-host Rob says, you know, can do a billion voices. I've heard them. It was like, and nobody's like, how does he turn into Kermit
all
Frog
the same.
So effortlessly?
Yeah.
how does, it's like, did Kermit the Frog just walk in? You know, but they were just like, what? Someone can change their voice? Dear God, what does that mean? Like, all of our data, just throw it out the window. You know, Anderson Cooper is like banging his hand on the stage. Like, this is impossible.
Yeah.
It's incomprehensible.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, okay, come on, man.
Nobody stopped to ask, like, Anderson Cooper, why are you down bad so far on Manti Te'o's social life?
Listen, Andy Coops. Yeah, we have bigger questions for you. Like, let's talk about the mole. I don't know. This was so bad because it was like, okay, once you got to the bottom of it, it then became a pile on. You know, more people and more people were just saying, let's just be mean right now. And it's just like you're bullying people who've done nothing to you. See, that's the thing. Like, I don't mind bullying someone who is a bully. You know, like, if you will, you go after somebody who went after you, you like, come, you, okay, fine, whatever. Or you're somebody who's going after somebody else. And maybe they felt like Lene might have been going after Manti Te'o, but it didn't feel like that. It felt like, you know, we have two new people to pick on. And we're going to do that. I mean, they even had, do you remember the article or was it the magazine cover that said like the most hated athletes in sports history? And you have Tiger Woods, Manti Te'o, and Lance Armstrong. Like, really?
Well, they said really? Lance Armstrong was happy that Manti Te'o knocked him off the cover. I do think that there is something that to be said. And I don't think I'm smart enough to be the person to like put my finger on it. But like 10 years ago, there wasn't sort of like that sensibility of like, but oh wait, hold on. Do we need to be like giving some grace to Manti Te'o or the people involved to sort of like tell their story of what happened? And I think that comes up more, but in some ways, but then there's other times where like I can think of like people now where that doesn't come up. So I don't know.
The body has a name, you know, and it's one of those things where they forgot. They forgot very quickly that the body had a name. They're like, oh, we all have to get this news story out because isn't it wild? Let's talk about it. But it's like, has anybody questioned how this person is feeling, you know, or how they're being affected by this? It's like, not really. But that's not good news. You know, you and I, we have talked about the Tiger King on podcast. Yeah. And I will dunk on that entire community in a heartbeat. But I'm not picking on them because they exist. I'm picking on them because the things that they are doing to the tigers are, you know, like, it's very bad. You are harming these animals and harming each other. I mean, a lot of them are harming each other. But I'm not just like waking up today and being like, you know who sucks? Joe Exotic. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, he's not bothering me. And then it's like, you do give him a chance to tell his own story when we see those documentaries. It's like back then it was just like, oh, did you hear about this thing? Let's trash him. And I think a lot of that happens today. And like, I don't think no one's above having like low moments like that. I think nobody's perfect, but it's just at the time, it was just a culture of, it's such a hot news topic and we all have to have our one liner in on it. And you know, results vary, you know, and sometimes it's like, oh yeah, we all were right about this one thing, but rarely is that the case. You know, I think in this time with Manti Te'o, some grace would have been, you know, extended, you know, more if we could do it over.
Well, especially for Manti Te'o, who, again, if the documentary is to be believed, I mean, didn't Manti Te'o do anything wrong here?
No. Oh, well, okay. So, on the one hand, you have Manti Te'o, who is basically just like you said, a saint on earth. I mean, they no one says anything negative about Manti Te'o throughout the entire film. I mean, until the point where they call him dumb at some point or gullible, and they even accuse him of maybe he was involved in this. But no one ever says this is a bad person. No one ever says this person, oh, I always knew Manti Te'o had it in him. You know, like they're like, this is a good person through and through. And anybody's parents would be happy to have them as a son, you know, like it's just glowing reviews for Manti Te'o. And then as it goes on, you start to question like, well, this person was just there. Like Manti Te'o had nothing to do with any of this. And you start to ask, well, what could Manti have done differently? And there are moments where the PR team and Notre Dame and other people have gotten in on the secret, right? They know about it. And so this is Manti Te'o's moment to where he has to figure out how to break the news because he's aware that it's about to happen. He knows Deadspin is coming for him or in whatever capacity, or at least for the most part, he knows that this is all a lie. He's figured it out. He's gotten an anonymous phone call, which was wild, by the way. I think the spin is really where it starts to spiral even more for him, because whereas I think there were times where he kind of leaned into certain aspects of the story because he had to for like optics wise, you know, like it just looks really bad if you say this right now, or, you know, Notre Dame, the school is probably like, don't say anything right now because we got a lot going on. We got this championship game, you know, like I don't think Manti Te'o would ever go out and incriminate Notre Dame, the school. And so, you know, if he wants to protect them, if he wants to protect potentially this girlfriend, if he wants to protect himself or his friends or whatever, he's going to go with the easiest way out, you know. And a lot of times that was kind of, you know, letting people pile on in areas where they shouldn't, or, you know, allowing different aspects of the story to kind of take the forefront so that he wasn't at it. So I was like, I don't think he did anything wrong, but at some point self-preservation kicks in and he just did, you know, what he thought was right in the moment. But yeah, he just, this is the type of person that you think would fall for something like this though, because he's so good. You know, he's such a good person that it's kind of like, maybe he's almost too good to where he was, you know, susceptible to hoping that everybody else was as good as he is.
Because really, they really did a number on Manti Te'o in that. So like we have the whole relationship that is going on, and okay, it's all like, you know, it's fun and cute, but we have the point where Naya is sort of feeling like, okay, I want to get out. And so that there ends up being a phone call to Manti Te'o. Naya has been in a terrible car accident. And then Naya is on a ventilator. And so like, I don't know if they have like some sound effects or what to have like. And so, and Manti Te'o is going to like every single day talk to Naya, like on the breathing machine. And then at some point, Naya is going to like come out of the coma, or Lanai is going to come out of the coma. And Manti Te'o is feeling like, I did that.
Mm-hmm.
I was gutted for Manti Te'o. I mean, that's horrible. Yeah.
He felt like his commitment to this person, and this is before their relationship really started. This is when they were friends-ish. Like, they could tell it was about to be a relationship. Like that's why she wanted to get out. Naya was just like, hey, I have to come up with something to get out of here. And Manti Te'o gets on the phone, and he's like hearing about the car accident. And he like, this is the one thing that's going to prevent them from ever meeting, is that this car accident has put Naya into the hospital, and they're never going to see each other because, I mean, she sounds like she's on the way out. But it looks like hearing Manti Te'o's commitment and dedication to calling every day was just too much for Naya, and she couldn't let it go. She's just like, I can't believe somebody is so committed to me that they would legit call and talk to me on a fake breathing machine, and, you know, to hope for me to get better. And so eventually she's like, surprise, I'm better. It happened. And so, of course, Manti Te'o, somebody who believes in faith like that, you know, who's probably been praying for this person and talking to them, it's like, yeah, I look at me, I can't just throw this to the wayside. Like, this must be something special. And so, yeah, I think they started to, I say they, but more like this situation starts to like really get it, like his core values, you know, and it starts to like reaffirm a lot of the stuff he believes in. And so, yeah, it's going right along lines with what he thinks should happen if you act a certain way. And, you know, I think at that point, it just starts to like become a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, at some point. Like he's given, there's so much confirmation bias, you know, he's like, I need this to happen. And then it was happening. And so everything was just like lining up perfectly for him to fall for this. But yeah, gutted is not the word. Like, it's just, it's so hard to watch because you could see the look on his face, you know, where you could see that his thought process was, I saved this person's life, you know, or our relationship saved this person's life. So yeah, he couldn't get out at that point, but neither could she. Because how could you just throw a bond like that to the wayside?
Yeah. And things had been hard for Lanai because I think Lanai is also dealing with leukemia.
Mm-hmm. Leukemia, the car accident, Manti Te'o's family had issues with cancer as well. He lost, I think, his grandparent, his grandfather to cancer. And so it was just like that could have been a strategic choice of ailment, or that could have just been an ailment. But regardless, that was one of those things that connected Manti Te'o to Naya even more. It was just like, wait, this person is dealing with so much that I'm dealing with, you know, and I can talk to him through that. I've been through something like that. It was just, they were just connecting on all levels. And so, like I said, like you said earlier, it's a kind edit. But assuming everything is true, it's a kind edit. But if it's false, like if there was some lying going on, then you look at it and say, oh, well, maybe Naya already knew this about Manti Te'o. Maybe they preyed on these like apparent weaknesses in them. And so there's a lot to question right there. But I choose to believe that we were given, you know, mostly accurate information from both sides. And just knowing that, you could see why he was so involved and invested in this relationship that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, like, Manti Te'o, kind of like an innocent bystander in all of this, you know, the only thing that you could come up with is, like, at some point, does Manti Te'o, like, have the realization of, like, hey, like, all of this, like all of this tragedy is good for my brand, but based on everything else we know about Manti Te'o, like, that doesn't really fit in line with his character. I guess the question is, did Manti Te'o start to have, like, a machine around him? And then, like, is it like Manti Te'o's people are sort of like, hey, this is what's good, you know, this is what's good for the, you know, the Manti Te'o brand. And, like, you know, he has like publicists and all this other stuff around him.
Yeah. And if he's talking about the girlfriend, which we really don't hear about, like we don't hear a lot of people like secondhand accounts of, oh yeah, he used to go on and on about her and stuff like that. So we don't even know if he's mentioned that to the machine, but if he did, they're probably like, yeah, keep this going. You know, you have this girlfriend, this story of this woman that you basically nursed back to health over the phone. You know, like, I feel like there are aspects that you really would want your star athlete at Notre Dame to have that were involved in this. It's like, yeah, whatever. He's in a long distance relationship, but look how committed he is. The commitment, though, is really where it starts to spiral again, because Manti Te'o at some point is such a big deal. And he has this long distance girlfriend that as a college athlete, he started to be approached by other prospects, if you will. Mm-hmm. Other women started to come into the picture. And Naya, she would catch on that I'm more invested in this now than he is. You know, I can tell his mind is other places. He's not texting me back. Who is this girl that answered your phone? Like, there's a lot of that going on at some point, which again, Manti Te'o being a star athlete, you assume that this kind of attention, they're going to be getting that anyway. And so does it help to have the long distance girlfriend? Yes. But for a brand as, you know, for Notre Dame, this squeaky clean brand, yeah, that's perfect. You have somebody who is not going to get into any drama. But I think those other girls that started to muddy the waters a little bit. Manti started to look around and be like, I mean, I got a long distance girlfriend, but there's some girls right here that I can really talk to. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, I think his brand was confused at that point.
Chappelle, so we get a timeline of the day in question where everything really went sideways with everything going on with these real life and, you know, complicated fictional life of Manti Te'o.
Yeah, Naya started to lose control of the situation. So to this point, Naya had pretty much worked her way into Manti's life and was, you know, getting exactly what they wanted from him. They were getting like attention and affection and conversations and being able to live a life as a woman. And Manti was, you know, delivering. But once, like I said, the fame started to kick in, the attention on campus from probably other women, that started to kick in. She's like, well, what do I do now? You know, because I can't be so invested in this. And he's like moving on. Mm-hmm. So she comes up with this plan, and This is so hard, right? Because I the timeline throws me off. A lot of it throws me off, but I don't know, man. This is gut wrenching.
Can I just touch on something? So, but before you get there, can I just touch on something that I think is important that you mentioned about how for Naya, that the ability to, you know, catfish as Lanai at a time when, you know, she was not able to, you know, live her life as a woman, that, you know, you sort of like get from her, like, okay, this is why I had to do this. Like, this wasn't like that I was like coming at this like some place of malice. Like, for me, this was like the only way that I could sort of like live out like sort of like this like second life of, you know, being in the world as a woman at a time when I could not.
Mm-hmm. It's like her motivation was attention and the ability to have that attention for who she was truly like who she was inside, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to her like outer appearance. And so she got it. She got the affection and attention that she wanted. And then at that point it was, how do I hold on to it? You know, mm-hmm. how do I get more of that? Because I can never meet this person in real life. You know, like it, and like, so, cause they're going to know that instantly they're going to know like, oh, you're not who you say you were. So I have to keep this going. And for that to be like her, you know, I guess her first real feelings of that nature. Yeah. You can expect to see her trying to hold on to it at all costs. And I think that's another reason why people have a hard time when once you watch it, maybe saying that this was done in malice. Cause you're like, oh, well, if her win condition is just that she gets him to text her every day and call her on the phone, it's like, it's not that bad. You know, like that's not that bad. Like she's not going out to ruin his life, you know?
Yeah, it didn't seem like that there was any sort of like, hey, like send me like this, money. These photos, the money, like anything like that. It did seem like that from Naya's point of view, like it was just like, I wanted to like, you know, be in this relationship and have this connection with this person. But I mean, if any of those things were happening, they were not documented here in this film.
Right. She's like, it's very different if you're like, oh, so you just wanted to talk to him a bunch? Okay, mm-hmm. that's not so bad. But if you're like, oh, wait, you were getting nudes and you know, and, right. and sending, you know, and he was sending you money. Like, you don't get into any of that.
Blackmail.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, like, if it happened, because we can only talk about what we saw, but if it happened, you know, that does make this story look a lot different. But all this to say, once it finally came to a head, she decided she wanted out. So she basically was like, I'm going to fake my death as the girlfriend. So she makes the phone call as like the cousin, and she's calling and she's crying. And I really probably, and there probably were real emotions there because she's considering she's breaking up this long-term relationship that she's had over the last few years with this, I mean, ridiculously famous, you know, and like nice person. And so she fakes her death. She Manti gets the phone call. There are tears. He's crying. She's crying. You know, it's a whole thing. And they had gotten so invested in each other's lives to where she's even talking to his parents at some point, you know, and saying, you know, my cousin died. You know, she's giving the whole spiel. And they're consoling each other because that was the same day his grandma died. So there's so much going on that somebody like Manti Te'o is thinking, you know, this one has to be happening for a reason, but two, you know, like this is something that we all need to rally like around. Like I need to support my family. I need to support that person's family. We all have to come together for this. And he ends up dedicating his senior year to that story that his grandma died and his girlfriend died on the same exact day. And there it is. That's the Notre Dame story that we were talking about, mm-hmm. you know, this football, story, because he goes off and he plays amazing. You know, he's so good. And every time they ask him about it, it's like, oh, you know, do you think your grandma and girlfriend are looking down? He's like, yeah, I do. You know, it's all lining up so perfectly that it is the story. It's the one that you make the movie about, you know. Mm-hmm. Had this not been fake, 100% Rob, there'd be a Netflix movie about it by now, you know. But we find out later that it was fake. Now, the finding out later is really what took me out the game, because I did not know that that's how it happened.
Yeah. Which part about how it happened?
Well, later on, so throughout the season, we have Manti's basically like rise to the Heisman Trophy race, which of course is the premier award for college sure. football athletes. But people were talking about how it's given to the person. A lot of times it's based on football, but this is voted on by sports writers. So they're looking for a good story as well. He was up against the money team in Johnny Manziel. So, mm-hmm. I mean, so that's a
in
hard one to beat.
Maybe this should have gone with Manti Te'o.
Honestly, if there was a third option, I would entertain it. But yeah, Johnny Manziel, who ends up winning it twice, by the way. So this road to the Heisman, this road to the NFL, is all happening. And Manti gets a phone call. And the phone call is basically Naya, who reveals, you know, because Manti is checking in all the time. He's still talking to her family and stuff like that. And who he perceives as her family, which is really just her, who's still maintaining this relationship with him. He talks to them. And this is the first time where Naya just lets her guard down and says, no, I'm Lene. It's me. I'm dead. I'm not dead anymore, you know? And Manti, his head is spinning because his whole season.
Yeah, like, wait, what do you mean you're not dead anymore?
Right. Like, this is the wildest thing for him, because this whole season, I mean, he has mourned. He has grieved. Like, the like I said, at no point did I not feel bad for Manti Te'o. Throughout the entire thing, I felt so bad for him. I was just like, man, my heart goes out to this guy because he's grieved so much. Losing a loved one is a lot. Losing two in the same day is a lot. But then being driven by that, waking up, talking about it every day, thinking about it, consoling the family, it just, it's so much on this guy. And now you're like, I'm not dead. So wait a minute. Hold on.
Yeah.
You know, like, but hang up the phone.
Why did Naya do that? I didn't understand.
Yeah, I think that was it. I think that was the moment that Naya lost all sensibility. You know, that was the moment where, like, what did you expect to happen? And it's like, I think the guilt of knowing that he, like that he meant I was going through all of this.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the want to get that relationship going again, because I mean, I guess Naya could have just created another account and tried to like create a different relationship, but I don't think it's that easy. I don't think you do that with Manti at this point in their life. And so the best that they could do is just be like, oh, it was a mistake. Yeah. I didn't die. I went into hiding and it was all a lie, but I'm alive now. Like, don't you want to be in a relationship with me anymore? Like, no. I would have hung up the phone and probably checked myself into like some type of facility at that moment, because that's, you just don't, that was probably the most malicious thing that Naya did from my point of view, was that moment of, you know, just throwing that, that bomb at Manti Te'o. And it just, it's just crushing to watch it.
Did she know that Deadspin was like getting close? Like, was that part of the reason where that people were sort of like asking questions about the authenticity of Lanai?
I don't know if that was, and I'm sure they talked about it a little bit, but I don't know if it was before or after that, right? So there's a moment where, and we kind of like, we jump past it, but there's a moment where Renaya, when presenting as male, showed up and met Manti with the niece that Manti had talked to on the phone, because it's like, oh, we really want you to meet my niece. And you've talked to her so many times, and Manti met them.
Yeah.
And so there were moments where Renaya was just getting so reckless, you know? And it was just, I think that was one of them. It's like she just felt like she needed to keep that connection going. And so after that, that's when she was just like, I can't let this go. I've met them. I've seen them. Like, we could get this, we could get the gang back together. And yeah, I think this is all Deadspin. I think this is just, you know, like I said, this one last like attempt is just grasping at anything you could have to keep this relationship going with Manti Te'o.
And then, so that there's another part of this story where there is the woman in the pictures that is Lanai is using, or that we see that Naya is using to catfish as Lanai. But the woman, like, I think a lot of times with these catfishing situations, it's just like people, like, just like random pictures. But that Renaya had some contact with this woman that was like in the pictures. Like, I feel like they did not really explain, like, they contacted the woman and she said, I was asked to like send a picture. But how did this relationship start? Where that this woman was, you know, servicing the photos for Naya to use.
I don't think this is out of the ordinary for the time that it was. I think with social media back then and camera phones finally just taking off, it wasn't uncommon for people to do big social media campaigns and like ask for people to take a picture, you know, with like the peace sign to show solidarity. Or like, I know, I used to listen to this random indie rock band. I assume they're indie, but it's called The Rocket Summer. And they used to have their fans like draw on their hand and like post a picture and tweet it out, right? And it would be like to show that you were a fan of them or whatever. I used to watch people, I'm like, ooh, white people crazy. But they made good music.
That's true.
But they used to do that kind of thing. And like, even like now, there's an artist named Tizo Touchdown. And he have like his fans posting Like sticky note pictures or whatever, or with the date on them or whatever phrase.
What should we have the Nothing But Netflix fans do?
Oh, I don't know, Rob. I don't know. We don't really have any good bits on here, Rob.
Well, they should write on their hand.
Oh, yeah, they should write on their hand. I don't know. What should they write? We've covered, let's workshop it.
We'll workshop it.
Yeah. Yeah, what do we call the Nothing But Netflix listeners? Anyway, we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that. But yeah, they've done that before. And so for this person to be like, oh yeah, send us a picture with these letters on it that probably means something that they made up, and this hand sign that Mantateo is very popular using. Do that. Send me a picture of it, and we're gonna hope this person comes back. You know, or their health gets better, or they have the drive or the motivation now to continue in whatever endeavor. So they gave them some generic speech. Rob, I'm pretty sure if you did that for the RHAP community, anybody would do it. You know, if you were just like, hey, you know, Sam Moore is about to go on vacation, but he's afraid. And so we're all going to give Sam a picture of us with like the thumbs up to show that Sam is like, you know, that he has our support. People would do it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't. Because I don't respect Sam, but you know, people would do it. People who do it. Okay. No one would do it, but people would consider it. And I don't think it's out of the ordinary that somebody would do something like this. So basically that's what Renaya does. She reaches out to Lene, the person whose picture she's using.
Yeah.
And she's like, can you send me this very specific photo? Because Manti Te'o needs that to believe that I'm still alive. But under the guise of like, oh, no, this is just something that we're doing, you know, for
but
someone.
But did she know her or it was just like, hey, I know this is random.
I think she might have. I think they were Facebook friends, probably. Like, I think if you want access to somebody's social media pictures, you kind of have to befriend them at some point. Mm-hmm. So I think in the last 4 years that this scam has been going on, she's probably added her from her real account, you know, to keep tabs or something. So I think there's probably something there. But again, this is social media back then. You know, they probably just sent out a mass message and, you know, or said this was a mass message, or we're reaching out to graduates of this high school that we went to. Because I think, you know, Renaya and the Lene person that whose photos they were using, they went to the same school. And so, you know, there's probably ways. This person had been lying about this Lene character for so long that, you know, anything to keep Manti Te'o in that bubble was going to happen. She was going to go to all lengths. When I first saw the photo, Rob, I thought, this is some crazy Photoshop. You know, like, this is wild. But to find out that, no, it was actually a real photo that the woman posed for, I was like, oh, okay. Decent. Mm-hmm. Decent work.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm not condoning it, but I was impressed.
Well, and kudos to Manti Te'o. Like, all right, I need a photo today. Yeah, you gotta send me a photo, get a newspaper. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Show me the
date.
And
they did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at this point, if you're Manti Te'o, you're like, pause. Shut everything down. Because this just throws off, it shakes your whole foundation and who you are as a person. For the last few years, this is what you believed in your soul. And now you're looking at a ghost, essentially. And they're telling, like, no, it's not what you think. It's like, no, this is too much. This is too much. Because even if I do want to believe you, how do I dial this back? How do I get the media to not think that I made it up? How do I get the university to not, you know, come after me? You know, what do I do here? People have been taking pictures with me and like the captions are, you know, Manti Te'o pushing through this tragedy and all this other stuff. And now to be like, surprise, you know, like that's not going to go over well with anybody. And Robert does not. But then we are presented with the timeline that after that, like shortly after that picture, that's when Jack Dempsey at Deadspin gets a hold of this random ass tip and everything starts to go downhill from there.
Yeah. We have not really talked about the Deadspin part of this documentary. We kind of get their perspective of the kind of a now defunct Deadspin, or it might be back in sort of like it's different people doing Deadspin. They ultimately are going to end up getting like sued into oblivion following the Hulk Hogan Bubba the Love Sponge saga.
I'm sorry, what was that?
That's for another documentary, Chappelle. But that being said, what do you think about Deadspin and how they are presented in this documentary?
I think they are absolutely one of the villains of the documentary.
Yes.
Like, whereas you can find some sensibility in Lene if you just follow their thought process, I'm sorry, Naya, if you follow that thought process, then you kind of understand, you know, like, obviously you're not as emotionally attached to the moment as she is. And so you're like, why don't you just stop? But you can kind of see their thought process, and you see Manti Te'o's thought process the entire time. You know, he did his due diligence. He actually asked people about this person and they confirmed that they existed. So I don't really throw a lot of this at the feet of Manti Te'o, but Deadspin. Mm-hmm. Deadspin presents this as, this is our moment to make this big journalism moment, right? Like this, to crack this story that nobody knows about, to make the world look stupid. We'll make stupid.
ESPN look stupid.
Yeah, but it's not just ESPN. This is, you know, ESPN is a huge network that's talking about this, but they are getting their information out to the world. So this is us like showing that ESPN is not serious journalism, but also everybody who believes this, this is also us screwing with you a little bit, you know? And so, if there's, aside from Dr. Phil, this is the other big villain here, because they go out of their way to present this story, and they get this tip that says Manti Te'o's non-existent dead girlfriend, basically. And it's saying like, he's a fraud. He's beloved, but he's a fraud. And I think there's something to be said about this need to go and find these people at the top of their career, these people who are so shiny and good, and just tear them down. You know, like it's something about, what does the Batman say? Like, everybody's a hero until they live long enough to become the villain or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, we were the ones who exposed this big fraud. You know, he's like the original, like a Tinder swindler or something. You're like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's mm-hmm. what they were going for. And yeah, everything that happens after this is just them really twisting the knife and making sure that all their ducks are in a row, so that when they release this story before Manti and Notre Dame can spin it, like they can get to it and say, no, look at this, look at this. And I think honestly, they did an effective job, because if their goal was to get people talking, they had people talking about every angle. They had people talking about whether this was true or not in general, whether Manti was involved in it, to mm-hmm. what level he was involved in it. Like the story just became yeah. more and more of a story. They probably released at least 1,000 articles about Manti Te'o since the moment that moment dropped.
Right. And so Manti Te'o becomes like this huge national story. And it seems like that it's the thing that they could not have foreseen coming, was that there's a lot of questions of like, oh, well, maybe is Manti Te'o gay? And that's why he would like, oh, what better way to hide that you're secretly gay than to make up a girlfriend and then tell everybody about it? And he played with our emotions and said that she died. And then a lot of people are like really, you know, coming at Manti Te'o during this time. And, you know, that's the thing that, you know, did Deadspin have any accountability? Yes, that there was this story that they smelled BS on the story of like, this is like a Hollywood story. How could this be true? But then were pretty reckless in sort of like how they let that information about it. Was Manti Te'o potentially involved and culpable here? And then really that spun out of control in terms of like people coming down on Manti Te'o.
Yeah, and I'll give them some grace, just a little bit, because I think they could not perceive a world where he was not involved, right? Like it started off like, how can somebody be this dumb? And then you start to question, could anybody be this dumb? Could this have actually happened? Because again, people were baffled. There was a 10,000 to 1% chance that Manti had even talked to this person mm-hmm. on the phone, because the voice, you know, like if nothing, everybody keep going back to the voice. What about the phone calls? Manti had voicemails. So once people started to hear the voicemails, be like, oh, well, maybe I too would have fallen mm-hmm. for something like this. Like, I mean, look at listen to the voice, 10,000 to 1. Dr. Phil even said it, you know? So I think it was one of those things where, yeah, in their position, this was obviously a villainous act. Like there's no other explanation. They just couldn't see a world where the internet had evolved so much to where you could have a fake person, have a fake relationship, have a fake family, have fake phone conversations. You know, like it just, we were just at a different time where we hadn't perceived a lot of that. Some people had, clearly, but everybody had not. And so, and it kind of introduces people to catfishing as a whole. You know, that like the documentary yeah. was out before that, but it wasn't as big of a deal until this national story hits, and now everybody's aware that it can happen, and you start to have people questioning, have you seen them? Have you talked to them on the phone? But like, have you video chatted them or whatever? I don't even know if you get the technological advances that you get after the like since that year, if not for the Man Tateo story. Like, does Apple have a need to have FaceTime so quickly, you know? Or like, I mean, they had it back then, but does it become such like in front of every, like, I guess in the forefront of everybody's technological advances, Zoom, FaceTime, Uvu, all these things? I think they just become like, you determine that at that point you need them because the world has gotten bigger. You're no longer in your small town. You have access to people all over the world and you need to be able to verify who you're talking to.
Yeah. So yeah, FaceTime was on the 2010, but like, was it widely used before then? You know,
exactly. And it's only iPhone to iPhone, you know. So if somebody has an Android now, what do they get to do? You know, it's like, oh, well, if I have an iPhone, do you have Zoom? No, I don't have Zoom. Do you have Skype? You know, all these different apps start popping up because now we have to make sure that everybody can talk to each other, but now we want to see each other.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's largely a part of the Man Tateo story, but, It definitely changes things, right? Like, if you look through it through a lens of all you had to do was video chat them, there's only so long you're going to go through this, like, oh, the camera don't work, or it's my screen is cracked. So there was a lot there, but Deadspin, you know, they did what journalists did at that time, you know? And I think that's pretty much the story of Deadspin. And you know, for them, it could have been looked at as a heroic moment from their point of view. They exposed this big scandal, but looking back, it does look like, no, they were just out there for this big story and they didn't care who they stepped on to get to it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Chappelle, anything else about Untold, the girlfriend who didn't exist, the Man Tateo story?
I mean, yeah, there's things there, but we've covered most of the big points. It's just that, you know, his own family started to question him at some point. I mean, like, I know his dad wants to dial some, right, some, run some stuff back from back then. He's like, I told Manti that he let the whole family down and like dishonored us all. And all this stuff. I was like, man, it's like, being a nice guy sucks because you got to deal with all of this stuff. Like, people hold you to such a high standard and then they just like tear you apart. That's why I'm scum now. So the people just like,
too many times we're like, Chappelle, come on, we told you. Don't be so nice. Like, don't be so naive.
No, not at all. People were like, Chappelle's scum. So, oh, he helped an old lady cross the street. Good for him. You know, give him a medal. It's a bare minimum I'm doing here. But yeah, this was an entertaining watch. I do kind of want more information, but mostly just to see if Man Tateo's okay. I think he is.
I think it said, I looked on his Wikipedia, he married in 2020. So I think that things are going okay on Man Tateo's end.
No, I meant like, okay. You know, like, is he, like, you know, because we see that he forgives Naya, but does he look back on this? Like, I don't like to see anybody in turmoil for a long time. Like I said, bullies get bullied sometimes and that's okay. But for me, like, somebody who was presented like Man Tateo was presented, I was like, man, are you good? And so hopefully he is. I don't want to see more of, you know, nice people going through, but if it makes for an entertaining documentary, I watch it. So I think overall, this was good content, Rob, and I'm happy that we talked about it.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, for me, the thing that I just like, you know, did not know at all was the angle of, you know, Naya and, you know, that she became a trans woman. That was, you know, I feel like that like was not widely reported or known, or at least not to me.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that was like one of the shockers. I was like, oh, okay. And because that also made me look at the situation in a different light as well.
Yeah.
And then we've touched on it a little bit, but like I said, the another big villain in this was the casual homophobia. You know, I think when it came to Man Tateo and the question about the girlfriend, it's like, well, if he has a secret girlfriend and nobody's met and he was hiding it or he made it up, then obviously he's gay. And then it's like, and you know what that means. And then you're like, just like, no, but what does that mean? And nobody ever says what they're trying to say. They're all like, oh yeah, there were questions about his sexuality. But again, he's a football player who is a college athlete. You know, like, what difference does that make? But that was just kind of like the undertone to that second half of the documentary. It was just, and then what if he's gay? You know, and so it should be, this is like, okay, you know, and this is pre-Michael Sam as well. And so, I just think the world has changed a lot, you know, and I don't get me wrong. Those conversations are probably still happening, but I think you have a lot of people who are more willing to put their foot down and be like, but it doesn't matter. Whereas I think that was a large part of why people questioned his character, you know, like, oh, he did all of this to hide this sexuality portion of him. When, you know, it just seems like, again, these are two ships that just collided and the outcome was catastrophic in many ways.
Okay. Chappelle, let's look at next week. Okay. And talk about what are we doing? Because there's some intriguing options, some things that we've talked about a little bit before. So anything top of mind for you?
So prior to recording this, you and I were talking about Me Time. That is the Kevin Hart and Mark Wahlberg buddy film. Something about stay-at-home dad enjoying his first time in years by joining his hard-partying old friend on a wild birthday adventure. And I'm assuming Mark Wahlberg is the hard-partying old friend. Yeah, that's right. It's hard to know when you have Kevin Hart as the straight man.
Yes, I mean, it would be like a little bit of nothing but Netflix all-stars at this point to have Uncharted's Mark Wahlberg and the man from Toronto's Kevin Hart together in a new Netflix movie.
Oh yeah, we have talked about both of those people before, and so it does make sense to kind of bring the gang back together to talk about that one. There's a show in the top 10, number 7, I think, by my Netflix's records, but it's called Mo. Mm-hmm. And Mo is listed as a heartfelt, gritty drama. In Texas, Mo straddles the line between two cultures, three languages, and a pending asylum request while hustling to support his Palestinian family. It stuck out to me because it's in Houston. I was like, that's my neighborhood. I see them. But it does look interesting, and it's number 7 right now. So that one stands out too.
But looking ahead, Chappelle, to what's coming this week.
Okay.
I do see something dropping coming by the time we would record next week. Coming Friday, Netflix's new reality show, Dated and Related.
Deep sigh. Okay. You know how I feel about this. Yeah. You should know. If you don't know how I feel about this, you should tell at this point. I am not okay that this exists.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's a world where it exists and we don't talk about it.
I think we have to. Because I feel like if we don't, people are like, oh my God, did you see this on Netflix, Chappelle? Did you see Dated and Related?
Right. Like right up your alley, right? Mm-hmm. No, not at all, actually. This is far from what I would like in my content. But it'll be fun to talk about. This is a British competition reality show. Is this
Hotties and Mommies? Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Hotties versus Mommies?
Hotties versus Mommies. I don't know. But it's coming, and I think we got to talk about it. I think, was it a Kristen McInnes type who reached out to us about that weeks ago on Twitter and said that they would like to talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I don't think we can get away with talking about it without her. So I'll put it like this, Rob. If Kirsten tweets us about it, I think we talk about
it.
If
not, she has to tweet.
She has to tweet us about it because that means she has to listen to this.
Oh, okay. And no, what about if people like listen and then tell her to listen?
But if she texts us, I mean, different. Listen, if y'all looking out for Kirsten like that, then do it. If I get a text, I'm ignoring it.
Yeah.
So tweet me about Dated and Related, Kirsten, and we got you. Come on. But we still got to make sure it works on her schedule. If it doesn't work on her schedule, I think we do it without her.
Okay. Oh, all right. The gauntlet has been thrown. Okay. Chappelle, what is coming up for you?
Ooh, okay. Recently, I guested on the Crime Scene podcast with Mari Forth and Sarah Carradine, and we talked about Woodstock 99. And that was fun. That was a fun conversation. I think I got really heated at some point. So check that out if you want to hear me yelling about people in 1999, because it was a good time. I guess I recently was on the Big Brother Wednesday recap. Obviously, if you haven't listened to that, what are you waiting on? It's Big Brother Day.
It's Wednesday. So come on.
We've moved on from there for sure. Tales of the Walking Dead is on AMC right now, and we're talking about it on post-show recaps. And so check that out. Myself, Jessica Leese, AJ Mass, and Josh Wiggler. Still covering Tales of the Walking Dead, but we're only releasing episodes every other week. And then Sasha Joseph and I are talking about Never Have I Ever on Silent Podcast. And so subscribe to Never Have I Ever. I Never have I ever buy Silent Podcast to get our own feed that Sasha and I have started so that you can keep up with the coverage of season 3 of Never Have I Ever. But I think that's it. I think if I missed anything, then I was always going to miss it because my head's not in the game. It's too early.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Well, Chappelle, this was very fun to go through the Manti Te'o saga here on Untold. They feel like that stuff like this is interesting. I would go back and revisit Untold again if they have something else that catches our interest.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'd be willing to talk to you about the Malice in the Palace one. Mm-hmm. It was so fun. And again, it's just one of those things where, like, through that lens with the media and the atmosphere that, you know, the United States had for sure back then. It's like, yeah, that's exactly why that was viewed like that. But looking at it back, I think that's why they call it Untold, right? It's the story that wasn't shared at the time. Like, we didn't get Manti's view at the time when this thing happened. We didn't get Linnea's view at the time mm-hmm. when this happened. I'm sorry, Naya's view at the time when this happened. And with that Malice at the Palace, we didn't get a lot of the perspective of, you know, our friend of the podcast, Meta World Peace. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be willing to talk about that with you anytime. And then hopefully we can finally get one of these big sports guests we were trying to get. I mean, 32 fans completely ghosted us this week.
Don't say ghosting on the Manti Te'o episode, Chappelle.
Yeah, we should make Akiva send us a picture with a hand sign. Hold yeah. it up.
Well, right, here's us hanging out with our guest this week.
Yeah, everybody should go get a balloon and write on the balloon Bubble Boys and take a picture of it and tweet nothing but Netflix.
Yeah.
That's what we'll have us do. And starting don't with Akiva. That. And don't he has to have the date.
Yeah.
No, don't do that.
Yeah, don't bring back the Bubble Boys. One of my worst ideas ever.
I think it's fine. I think we can workshop it.
Yeah. All right, Chappelle, thanks again for your incredible work today. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next time with more Nothing But Netflix. Make sure to follow at Nothing But RHAP on Twitter. And make sure to subscribe to our Nothing But Netflix podcast feed. Go to robinswebsite.com/Netflix feed. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.